on Saturday for our first Saturday meeting of this committee. I'd like to welcome everybody here. And on my left is Representative Dahl, Representative Cogill, Representative Gruenberg. On the far right is Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, Vice Chair Bob Roses. And we will again be considering HB 109, and it's my intention, the hope and intention.
Legislative work from an outside source. And the principle here is that as legislators, we are paid by the state. When we do legislative work, we should do it as a legislator and not as an employee or under contract for somebody else. And I think that we have seen the potential for problems doing this. It creates divided loyalties among legislators, I mean, for a legislator to have two masters, basically, in legislative work. And I think that it's clearly a problem and something that we can easily resolve. So that's what Amendment 11 does.
Okay, any questions for Representative Gardner? Okay. Would you refresh my memory, Representative Gruenberg, on you wanted to take out for 1 year thereafter? Was that an amendment to?
No, that phrase was not offered. I offered the amendment with that phrase deleted.
With that phrase in. Okay. If there's no further discussion, any other discussion on this?
Mr. Chairman. Seems to me that we might be off on that because it seemed to me like Representative Johnson objected to deleting that language.
I objected to the amendment.
Okay, all right. Okay. Well, I'm still waking up then myself.
Okay. So I'm.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I speak to the amendment for a moment?
Yes, please.
Just so that I'm clear, the original amendment, we were saying that a legislator could not represent anybody for compensation before the state or do administrative action. I can appreciate that. For 1 year after is the part that that it was the sticking point. And I tend to agree with that because you couldn't, on line five, you couldn't authorize another to act on the legislator's behalf for 1 year after. So I think consistency is good here. So just I'm talking through to remind myself of the discussion. So am I correct, Representative Gruenberg, that that's the reason why?
Mr. Chair, yes, just so everybody understands, the amendment as offered, Amendment 11, reads, during the term for which elected or appointed, comma, a legislator may not directly, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. It's only during the time we're in office, and it's not for the time thereafter. I hope that answers this.
Reverend Gardner, what's your feeling on that again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the amendment as offered by a member of the committee, and I can live with it. I personally think it should be for longer because legislators could conceivably set something up for their personal benefit once they leave office. I can live with it the way it's currently offered.
Okay. Let's take a vote on it. You move your objection, anybody?
Just
Representative Roses.
I guess I'm failing to see the difference between this and the Cook-Lane amendment that we had discussed earlier that we decided for some reason to withdraw. And it looks to me like the language is similar. And if we withdrew that amendment, why are we considering this one?
Which amendment is that?
Representation. It was Amendment 3rd.
This was 22107. It was under the K-17. It was the 25GH1059/K.17 Cook-Lane Amendment.
I'm advised that's Amendment number 14.
Which means this would have been brought forward by Joyce Anderson on behalf of the committee as part of the changes that they recommended, I do believe.
What is the new amendment?
I think you find it in the book under 14.
Correct. This is Iris Matthews, staff to Representative Gardner. Actually, the language in Amendment number 14, the representation clause before the boards and commissions, that speaks to the part of the definition. If you look at the definition of administrative action in 2445.171, it excludes representation before quasi-judicial agencies. So this is really taking care of what that that definition of administrative action excludes. And then the administrative action definition is more so concerned with the writing of regulations or the promulgation of regulations. So you couldn't be paid for, say, helping a nursing home write, you know, or comment on new HESP regulations, but you, you know, as a legislator can certainly have an opinion on those.
Does that satisfy you, Representative Rogers?
Sure. Yeah, that answers my question. I wouldn't say it satisfies me, but it answers my question.
Fair enough. Would you care to move the objection to this amendment?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. So that means Amendment 11 has passed as amended, correct?
In the form that I offered.
In the form as offered by Representative Gruenberg. And good, we got one amendment done and millions to go here. Okay, so that's, now we're going to go to, you're going to go to,
which one?
We're going to go to 13, amendment number 13. This is by the governor, and it may have a problem as explained by the Department of Law Attorney Dave Jones. Mr. Jones, are you with us, please? This is amendment number 13.
Do we have the new 13?
Right here.
Put new 13 out. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Procedurally.
And this is Mr. Dave Jones from the Department of Law.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. David Jones, Assistant Attorney General with the State of Alaska Department of Law. When the committee considered Amendment 13 on Thursday, the committee adopted the amendment, but with an additional amendment to restore language that the governor proposed to delete. The language that the governor proposed to delete required reporting the amount of income by a legislator or a legislative director only when the source of the income was known to have a substantial interest in a legislative, administrative, or political issue or action. The consequence of adopting Amendment 13 with restoration of the language that the governor proposed to delete is creation of some ambiguity, because now what it says is that income in excess of $1,000 received as compensation for personal services, the name and address of the source of the income, the amount of the income, the number of hours of services performed to earn that income, and a statement describing in detail the natures of the services performed shall be disclosed. But then it says, if this is income received by a legislator or a legislative director, the amount of the income shall be reported if the source of the income has a substantial interest in the legislative, administrative, or political matter. What that does is create some ambiguity about when and who has to report the amount of the income, because this provision applies not only to legislators and legislative directors, but also to the public members of the Select Committee. So it's not clear exactly what the effect is of this amendment with the amended language that is restored by virtue of the committee's amendment to the governor's proposal. So there are at least two possible interpretations of that. One is that public members of the Select Committee would have to report the amounts of the income received for anything over $1,000, regardless of from whom it's received. But legislators and legislative directors have to report the amounts only when they're from sources that have substantial interest in these legislative, administrative, or political matters. Another possible interpretation is that legislators and legislative directors have to report the amount of income received from any source if the amount exceeds $1,000. But if that source is someone with a substantial interest in those various matters, they only have to report the amount if it's over $1,000. So it creates some confusion by including amounts of income to be reported in both sections. Now, clearly, the governor's position in making the proposed amendment was that the amounts of income and the number of hours worked should be reported in all instances in which the income exceeds $1,000. But if the committee has made the policy choice that the amount of income should be reported only when the source of the income is someone with a substantial interest in legislative, administrative, or political matters, then there's a way to amend that provision to make that intent clear. And Representative Grunberg's staff, Mr. Cohen, has prepared an amendment that would do that. And the effect of this amended version of Amendment 13 would be to require reporting of the amount of income and the approximate number of hours of services performed only when the income is received by a legislator or a legislative director from a source that has a substantial interest in a legislative, administrative, or political matter. And so with that explanation, I hope it's a helpful explanation of the ambiguity that was created. I leave it to the committee to decide whether it wants to go with the governor's original language, which would have deleted the limitation on when the amount has to be reported, or to go with the amendment that Representative Grunberg's staff member has prepared.
Ms. Anderson, did you wish to comment on this? I thought you were going to be in Anchorage this morning talking to us. Apparently, you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to comment on that. Actually, I was going to be at the Iditarod this morning, but I'm not there. Joyce Anderson, Administrator for Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. I have talked to Dave Jones. I've also talked to Brooke Miles, who's the Executive Director of APOC, in trying to understand what Mr. Jones has said is a very complicated issue based on what happened at the committee last week. I agree with Mr. Jones that it's a policy call by the legislators as to what they want to do, whether they want to have it all income over 1,000 or whether they want to have it just income over 1,000 that has a, as we're talking about, a substantial interest in legislation, legislative, administrative, or political. So I would go with what the committee.
Any questions for either Mr. Jones or Ms. Anderson? Representative Grunberg?
Yes, just so we have something in front of us, I would ask that the document that's on the table be labeled New Amendment 13.
Without objection.
And my motion, just so we have something in front of us, is that we rescind our action in adopting Amendment 13, and then I will offer New Amendment 13, just so we have a motion in front of us to debate.
Without objection. Okay. I'm going to offer the New Amendment 13, please.
So moved.
Okay. So moved. Any objection?
I'll object.
For discussion? Representative Cargo.
I suppose this is probably more a legal determination that we're going to have to look at, but once again, I'm looking at the language that was passed by the voters, and we're substantially changing what they thought they were passing. And so I'll probably ask for a legal opinion on this again, because we seem to get wrapped around the axle when it's the number, but we don't have any problem changing all the verbiage. So, I mean, if we're going to be consistent, I think that's we need right. to be consistent. And if this language is up for modification in this 2460-200, which was the last section amended in the voters, I was just trying to bring consistency to what the voters said. If because the $1,000 limit is going to be probably not politically correct to change, but it might be politically correct to change this, but it might not be legally correct. Or if it is legally correct, then the number is legally correct to change. So, I mean, you know, the question I had when I made the amendment the other day, when they voted, they thought they were voting on a limit for income. I mean, you had to report the limit of income if it had a substantial legislative interest. And I think that was key to even the documents that they had in their voters' handbook. So I think it would be probably a legal question that we're going to have to answer, maybe in judiciary. So I'm going to object to the amendment because I want the, if we're going to stay with the financial disclosure as stated, it should probably then be as stated by the voters. And so I'm just going to object to the amendment at this point. That still leaves the question, what's in 900? And so with that, Mr. Jones is correct. What I'm going to probably do then is offer an amendment to take the Section 5 of the what the voters passed and put it into this bill so that we have a consistency. And then if there is other inconsistencies, then we work with the law as it was outside of the voters' will. Can I make that clear?
Okay. Any comment from Representative Rosas?
Just a question, Ms. Anderson. In your opinion, is there any more or less difficulty in terms of understanding or enforcement from your perspective from the commission on any of these amendments that we're talking about? Is there one that's more cumbersome than another or one more clear than another from your perspective? It's what you have to be concerned on the Ethics Commission or for AIPOC.
Representative Rosas, through the chair, are you talking about this particular amendment or any?
Oh, this particular amendment.
Good question.
Representative Rosas, through the chair, even though 2460-200 is in the ethics statute, it actually is administered by AIPOC. So the best person to answer that question would probably be Brooke Miles, who's the executive director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. I work closely with her, but she is actually the agency that has to administer this particular section.
Know. And you had mentioned when you...
I did talk to her last night, and in relation to Mr. Jones' concern with the ambiguity and what was passed at the last committee meeting, and we were discussing that. This language seems to clear that up based on what my conversation was with Ms. Miles last
okay,
night.
Okay, let me clarify. When you say this language, you're talking about the new amendment that we're referring to by Grunberg?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Ms. Ebony Grunberg.
I'm going to ask a question to Mr. Jones, and I don't know if Mr. Cohen needs to answer this too. Gentlemen, am I right that the new Amendment 13 was drafted to clear up a potential ambiguity and make it just easier to deal with? Am I correct on that?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, that is also my understanding.
And if I may continue, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
And this new Amendment 13 was worked on by both of you, and you both agree, as I understand, that this does, in fact, clarify the ambiguity and simplify it. That's the intent of it. Is that correct?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
And Ms. Annan, do you concur?
I concur.
Okay. Care to, Representative Rosas?
Yes, I'd like to comment on the statement that was made by Representative Coghill regarding the potential changing of the wording of the initiative. And I think we've had a number of other representatives come forward when we were discussing other bills that touched upon items in the initiative and the concern that they had and whether we had the authority to do that, and had been asked that we get the Attorney General's opinion on our ability to do that. And so I would happen to agree with Representative Coghill that if we're going to start messing with it in one area and we've got all kinds of people wanting to challenge it because they didn't like the way we were trying to word that particular part, but then when we get to this, nobody seems to have that same challenge. So either we change it or we don't change it. Either we leave it alone and accept it and wait 18 more months before we do anything with it, or we agree that our intent is to try to fix what we think the voters thought they were passing, which I think puts us in pretty dangerous territory to try to interpret what the voters were, what their understanding was when they voted. That's the problem with having an initiative, is you have people voting on something they don't have necessarily have a clear understanding of what it is that they're passing or what the impacts are going to be. So I think if we're going to bring it up in one bill and say that we shouldn't touch it because we don't particularly like the language, then we need to be consistent. We need to follow through on that in every aspect of it, whether we like it or not.
Okay, Reverend Grunberg, and then we're going to take action after your comment.
If the members would, thank you, Mr. Chair. If the members would look at the original Amendment 13, Down at the bottom of page one and the top of page two, we have the language that was deleted in the original amendment as offered by the governor, if the source of income is known, et cetera. Amendment three, the last time we met, by Representative Coghill, restored that language. And the reason we did was to make this exactly the same as the initiative. The new Amendment 3 keeps that language in, if the members would look at paragraph 2 in the middle of new Amendment 13. Line 3, is known or reasonably should be known. So the Coghill Amendment, restoring that language, remains in this, and we have not changed that from the initiative.
Okay. With that, is the objection removed?
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Yes.
According to my understanding of what we put back in.
Representative Dahl.
Yes, yes, thank you. It said, received from the source shall be disclosed. And shall be. The statement now in the new amendment says the statement explaining how the income was earned may.
Where are we?
Number two, in the section two.
Okay.
And we were talking about including that back in, and yet it's not exactly, the wording is not exactly the same.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Okay. What Representative Dahl is referring to is the former Amendment 13, page 2, line 3, the phrase shall be disclosed. And she is looking at the end of paragraph 2 on the new Amendment 13, the word shall be disclosed. What happened last time we met is that when we put that language back in, the phrase shall be disclosed was put back in. And this leaves exactly that same language. There's no change. We put it back.
Or shall be, and a statement explaining how the income was earned may be included. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Is the objection removed?
Who made that?
Who made the objection?
I think I objected. Well, I'll remove my objection, put it in, but with the understanding that if we're going to amend initiatives, this is the beginning.
I hope we don't.
Okay. Without objection, then, the new Amendment 13 has passed, and I believe we need to go now to Amendment number 9. Thank you.
We just have a minute, Mr. Chair, if I may.
And Ms. Anderson, I believe you would like to speak to Amendment number 9.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I have had a discussion with a Representative Grunberg and the Chair, Representative Lynn, regarding Amendment 9. Amendment 9,
this was tabled. I guess I'll bring it off the table. Amendment number 9 is off the table.
Committee members, Amendment number 9 was a recommendation by the Ethics Committee to require legislators and legislative employees to report all boards and commissions to the Ethics Committee. And currently, and I apologize, I can't find that in the legislative financial disclosure statement, but currently my understanding is from discussions with Brooke Miles, who's the director of APOC, is that the legislative financial disclosure requires legislators to disclose their boards and commissions, and they need to disclose all of them. Unfortunately, Ms. Miles isn't here, and I can't seem to put my finger on that particular statute. Maybe Dan Wayne has it. I'm not sure. Dan Wayne might have it. I'm not sure, but I don't. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the citing is. It's part of the legislative financial disclosure. I know that in the ethics code, disclosing boards and commissions is subjective right now, and that means that if you have an interest in legislation, a substantial interest in legislation, you need to disclose that you are on that board and commission. And what we were trying to do is make it consistent between both the financial disclosure and the ethics committee so that legislators weren't confused as to, well, should I report this to APOC and then not report it to ethics? And so we were trying to make a point of consistency. Further, in the legislative financial disclosure, you report on March 15th for the previous year, whereas with ethics, you are reporting boards and commissions within 30 days that you're on a board and commission. So it becomes more current information than just every March 15th. So there were actually two reasons there. As I said, I cannot find the citing for right now where the financial disclosure requires that, but I know that I've had this conversation with Burke Miles, and I apologize for not being able to find that. I was just asked that this morning. So we're going to see if we can find it. But I want it under the financial disclosure.
Right. Representative Gernberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You had to be in your chair before you start here.
I am. I had asked to have this amendment tabled just to cure a grammatical thing, and I think we have something by Mr. Wayne here, which is going to be given out with my grammatical cure. The issue that we have in the subcommittee, and gentlemen on the subcommittee, Representative Roses, Representative Coghill, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought we dealt with this issue in the subcommittee, and it was at least my feeling that we didn't need to have disclosed if you're on a garden club or a dog club or a church board or something that has nothing to do with the legislature.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. And we may have deferred that till we got to the full committee. Ms. Anderson.
No, we did not. We actually allowed it in here, but it was.
President Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I was looking at my list here, and I'm going to have to go look at the bill. This is an amendment to a section of the bill, so I'm going to do a little bit of searching on that.
Do we have, where's the Wayne amendment? I was being copied, okay. Is this a section in the bill now?
That's what I'm looking for.
I'm sorry. Maybe we can stand at ease, or I don't know how you want to do it.
At ease. We're back on the record. Representative Gernberg.
Yes, as the members will see if they look at the language on Amendment 9 we have, what we did was I offered an amendment putting the language on line 7 and through 9 that's capitalized back in, so it would only require disclosure of boards, et cetera, that have a substantial interest in the legislative activities of the legislator or employee. That was adopted. Then we tabled the full amendment to cure the grammatical fix. And that's where we are at the moment. And Dan Wayne, where is that amendment, Mike? We need to give the Wayne amendment, the new Wayne amendment, out to the members.
So as I understand this, this is only, we legislators had to make up their mind whether it's substantial or not. Would it not be easier just if you're on a board or commission, you just disclose it? What's the problem with that?
Mr. Chair.
To keep it simple.
Yeah. We dealt with that last week when we put my amendment to the amendment in. If you wish to revisit it, can I? My view is that it is going to be burdensome and unnecessary and particularly irrelevant if you have to disclose every church board you're on, every garden club, every chess club that doesn't have anything to do with the legislature.
Yeah, let me ask, since if this were to come up and I didn't disclose something, I would find myself probably talking to Ms. Anderson here whether I was correct or not in disclosing or not disclosing. And so I'm more concerned with what she would think on this thing, because I would hate to have a disagreement with the Ethics Committee here. So, Ms. Anderson, could you speak to that?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I really apologize for not having that cite under the APUCs section, since that isn't something I deal with. But basically, we were just trying to make this requirement in sync with APOC, and if the committee feels that they still only want to report boards and commissions that have a substantial interest in legislation, which then becomes very subjective. I guess that's a policy call the committee has to make. And as I said, I apologize for not having that other citing. I know I have worked with APOC in putting together my list of disclosures of boards and commissions along with their list of boards and disclosures and commissions. So I know it's a requirement. I just can't put my finger on the citing at this particular moment. But again, it's a policy call that needs to be made by the committee.
Mr. Chair.
So my desire, personally, would be to report everything. It's a lot more simple. Well, I don't have to make up my mind, because something that doesn't have substantial interest today might well tomorrow or next week. Nobody know.
Mr. Chairman.
Everton Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would think that with the capital appropriations that each discretionary that each individual has for named grant recipients, that I don't think you could name a board that someone couldn't send some money to, be it a garden club, be it a church group. Anyone could name that recipient in their individual capital appropriations, and that, to me, when you start giving people money, is a substantial interest in legislative action.
Well, that's right.
I would want to disclose everything. I tend to fall on your side.
I would think so, too. I'm not now. In another state, I was on the board of a community band. I'm in a community band in Anchorage. I may one day be on that board, and yet I gave some excess campaign funds this time to that to the band. I found myself in trouble when it wouldn't appear that that would have anything to do with legislation at all. Would you want to make a fix on this, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would, but I'm not certain I know how.
Now's the time to learn.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coggio.
We would have to go back and undo what we did, I think, at this point. And the amendment before us is not the new amendment yet. So we have the tabled amendment before us, and it's off the table. So we could rescind our action in passing the amendment that added the substantial interest language. And then that would have the original amendment before us, I think.
Mr.
So that would be the one.
I would entertain that motion, Representative Coggio. Would you wish to make that motion?
Well, actually, I think the representative at the end there.
Robert Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make that motion. Thank you.
We're all learning here. Any objection?
I think.
Representative Coggio.
I think our records keeper's confused. Yeah. You might want to let her know what you just did.
Okay. The amendment 9 was tabled. We brought it off the table. And we just had a motion by Representative Johnson
to rescind our action.
To rescind the action on the entire Amendment 9. And so now we have Amendment 9 before us. Is that correct?
No. We have an objection.
You have an objection?
Nope.
Nope. No, we have.
Because I saw his hand up. I was expecting
it. Representative Grunberg.
Let me make a suggestion. Just before I do make my motion, my recollection and what Ms. Miles may have been referring to on the financial disclosure, if you're on the board of a business, I think you have to disclose that. I think that is the type of board that's on that form. I'm not sure I'd have to look, but I know that if you're an officer or on the board of a business, you have to disclose that. So if we do what the members are planning to do, that may also then require an amendment for nonprofits to the APOC laws. We can look at that in judish.
I think so.
But my suggestion, respectfully, to Chair and the members, if we could take the new Amendment 9, which cures the grammatical problems, and make Representative Johnson's amendment to that, it reads properly in what we would do, if I may, looking at the new amendment number 9.
Did everybody have a copy of amendment 9?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coggio?
The member's out of order. We do have a motion on the table, so I think we dispose of that and then take a suggestion up.
Okay.
Then we'll have to do it twice.
So a motion is on the table.
I think that's clean.
Would you repeat the motion, please, so we all know what we're voting on?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To rescind our action on old amendment 9 and take up new amendment
No amendment nine? Would that be the appropriate motion?
It's a motion to rescind.
I would move that we rescind our action on amendment nine.
Okay. Any objection? Without objection, that is rescinded. Now we have a motion for new amendment number nine.
So moved.
Okay. Any objection?
For discussion.
Okay, for discussion. Representative Johnson.
I would like to amend new amendment nine to include all boards and commissions.
Okay.
And it's conceptual at this point because I do not have the language.
Okay. Is there an objection? Is there an objection, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
If I may offer to do what Representative Johnson, I think we can do it. What we would do is simply delete the phrase on lines 6 through 8, quote, that regularly has a substantial interest in the legislative activities of the legislator or employee. I just think technically we move to delete that phrase, and that will accomplish what Representative Johnson wants to do.
Okay, would you make that amendment to the amendment?
I would.
Okay, do. So moved. Any objection to that? If not, do we move the objection to new amendment number nine as amended?
Just 1 second.
Okay. That would be amendment one to amendment nine. To be amendment one to new amendment number nine.
Okay. Let me see. Legislator who serves. Okay.
Okay.
I think it works.
Okay. Is the objection removed? Good. New amendment number nine has passed. Okay. Ms. Johnson, I wanted to add, Ms. Anderson, are there any other amendments you need to comment on before you try to catch your airplane?
Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Grunberg had one other issue that he wanted to discuss with Amendment 10.
Amendment number 10. Everybody, let's go to Amendment number 10.
Mr. Chair.
And I thought we were going to do that in judiciary.
I just wanted to put on the record.
Put it on the record, please.
If the members would look at Amendment number 10. On line 20, there is a statute referenced. And the statute that's referenced today as 24.60.1300 just refers to organizational minority caucuses. That's the phrase that's used. And in this paragraph, they talk about majority caucuses also. Lines 8 and 9, and I'd just like to announce that in judiciary, we'll be working on this to craft a proper definition of all caucuses for the purpose of that paragraph.
Excellent. Noted, and the three of us are on the judiciary committee. We will remind everybody to do that. Ms. Anderson, any other amendments or portion of the bill you'd like to comment on?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. shall I let you try to catch an airplane back to Anchorage? I want to thank you for spending your Saturday with us as compared to the Iditarod.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you could give me my form back.
Gerber, yes. Please. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We really do appreciate it. Okay, we are, in fact, making progress here.
On Amendment 20.
Mr. Chairman, I have a
question. Representative Johnson.
I have a question, please. Is there anything that excludes reporting in this boards and commissions that may be appointed by the legislature?
It would be what?
Boards and commissions that may be appointed by the legislature. I mean, they're on public record. They're out in the open. I mean, it was appointed by the speaker or the president. And I'm wondering is there anything in this that would still require us to disclose that? And the reason I ask, I was just appointed to the Parks Bail Advisory Committee.
Ms. Anderson is back again. Welcome.
I'm sorry. So
haven't left yet.
Would that be something that, Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes.
Would that be something that would need to be reported since it's already on public record? It's out for everyone to see. It was an appointment by the body.
I'm sorry, Representative Johnson. I was walking back, and I didn't hear your whole comment. So if you could repeat that would be great.
Is it necessary under the way that we have this bill drafted now that it would be necessary to report committees and commissions that were appointed by the legislator. And this specific example I have is I was just appointed to the Parks Bill Advisory Committee. Is that necessary to report that type of activity? And there are a number of them that the presiding officers appoint people to. I mean, to me, that's an open process. It's public. Everyone knows about it. Is that something that still needs to be reported under the statute as we have it before us now?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that's a good question. No, you do not. If you are appointed by either the House or the Senate or by the presiding officers, you do not need to report that to the Ethics Committee as being on a board or commission. You are prohibited as a legislator from being on any board or commission that must be confirmed by the legislature. So in other words, you cannot be on any board or commission that maybe the governor would want to put an appointment on, unless the appointment was part in statute stating that you shall be part of that board or commission. But no, you do not need to disclose that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. We may have to reconvene the committee out at the airport. I don't know. Okay. With that, we're going to move on to amendment number 20. I see Representative Seaton is...
20 or 21.
Well, everybody have this in front of them here. This is a side-by-side. And that pertains to Amendment 22 and 21. And 20 will not be offered because, as I understand it, it's an earlier version of Amendment 22 by Representative Seaton. Representative Seaton, could you bring us back to where we were before we adjourned the other day?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we had I think it was K-43, the Amendment 20 was a earlier version of Amendment 22. So that's the current one, and you have a revised copy of 43 as well.
Then Amendment 20 will not be considered, correct, offered? Okay, fine. Yeah.
Not by me.
Okay, good. Okay, continue, please.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Coghill.
I see a bewildered look on the person who has to transcribe this, so... Would you repeat the amendment that's before us?
Okay. Amendment 22 is before us. Amendment 20 is not being offered. Amendment 22K.43.
The new one's K-50.
And the new one is now K-50. Revised version of amendment number 22, K.50. Are we okay? Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we talked the other day, if the we do have in statute a blind trust, however, it is not very effective in keeping someone out of trouble if they would attempt to utilize it. So amendment number 22 clarifies the blind trust statutes, and the current revision takes in all of the suggested changes that Tam Cook had made, as well as the Department of Law, and puts those in. I could run through those differences if you want, or if, mainly that's a substitution of section for chapter, and we deleted some words here and there and modified some
and
to
before
make
we do
work.
That, I guess I'm going to move Amendment 22, K.50. Any objection?
I'll object for discussion.
Fine. Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe your staff prepared a side-by-side.
Yes, they did.
That went through that with the original language and the amendment number 22 language. That amendment number 22 language was based on K-43. And so there's been a few grammatics citation changes, which were requested by the Department of Law, and a few words deleted and substituted language to make it more specific. And so if you wish to go through those, you have those in K-50. If you want, I don't know where you want to go from here.
Okay. Any questions or a comment from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
I think for the record, since this is a fairly complicated thing that we normally don't deal with in this committee, it might be helpful for Representative Seaton or Mr. Jones or somebody to walk us through K-50 so we have on the record what it does, and members will fully understand what it does.
Fine, and in kind of an abbreviated fashion, as you go through here, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, what we've got is basically working from another state statute that more aptly fit or more fully address blind trust to make them useful and not get someone in trouble. There's many modifications here, as well as so basically from the first part we go into that a blind trust may be used to satisfy the potential conflict of interest by putting assets in a blind trust, and then it goes through the conditions that must be met for those blind trusts to be active, that they must be disclosed, and that they must, where they must be, what they can and can't contain. They cannot contain things that are recorded in a public office. So if you had a building, for instance, in which is going to have a deed recorded, then you would, it would be open to everyone, including the trustor, to know that that ownership is there. Those kinds of instruments could not be in there, as well as things that are really not marketable. If you had a homestead and your grandmother was living on the homestead and you wanted to put that homestead in there, even though our statutes, it would fall under, it's marketable, but you would never expect a trustor to sell the trustee, I mean the trustee to sell the trustor's grandmother's house out from under her. So
take your grandmother out.
This takes care of those ambiguities, make things that are marketable that would be normally sold by a fiduciary. It also then puts limitations on the trustee and says that the trustee won't disclose the items to the trustor, the person that creates a blind trust, that now they would be required to either file their taxes, is often done by trusts anyway, and not relate the individual items to the trustee, or provide a gross amount to the person that made the trust, but not the individual item. So all they would be doing for their tax purposes. So it goes through a number of items there to eliminate the problems that would be created by a blind trust and what would unintentionally break that blind trust. It also removes from the APOC filing the requirement that you file all those individual assets, because in one sense you're required to have a blind trust in which you don't know what's in there, but in another sense you're required to report the financial disclosure of anything you made over $1,000 on. So this takes it out of there, and the trustee will now communicate with the Ethics Commission if they request any individual items, but that'll be under seal unless the agency, or now it's it would be the personnel board, would actually file a complaint based on the blind trust. And if they would do that, then it would break that trust open, so it would be then public and it would no longer be a blind trust. It would no longer fulfill the function of separating that knowledge, because the trustee would have to have knowledge to defend themselves. So I think that we've gone through all the questions that Tam Cook had. This is in the Executive Ethics Act. What we did was we brought it right down very specifically and identified the exact agency that would have the determination of those, and I think that we've got it very clear, and we've worked with the Department of Law to, I think, clarify all their questions. But if they have any more, they're here.
So. Excellent. Mr. Jones, do you have any follow-up on that or comment?
No, Mr. Chair, I do not. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is going to kind of run counter to some of my other statements earlier in this committee about dealing with things here, slowing down, and making sure that we get a good bill out. But I truly think this is an area that is best served to move to the judiciary. And I would be prepared to send the three members here on with this to judiciary with the understanding that I think a blind trust is good, and as a broad policy statement, that we should have some type of capability for a blind trust. But this is one that I would be prepared to, in some form, table with sending the three members on to judiciary with with the will of the body or the will of the group or the decision of the group, that we in concept believe there ought to be some type of language about a blind trust. But I think this steps outside a little bit of the of what this committee is designed to do, and is much more of a legal question. So I'd be prepared to either table or move this and send it with the members, three members who are on the judiciary, and let that committee who's better served do that. So
in other words, you agree with the concept that we're trying to do here.
Right. But when you get to the details, I think that's better suited for a committee that's designed to deal with this kind of thing. So that's my opinion, and it is what it is.
That's what we have. Representative Roses.
I appreciate that opinion, but I actually sort of disagree with it, because if we're talking about we want to send this on to judiciary because it has legal implications, so does every other decision we made on this bill. Every item has legal implications. So I don't see this any different than the others. I think where the real difference comes in is because it's fairly new language for us to look at. We haven't had as much time to digest this. Some of us that were on the subcommittee actually did have more time, because we saw this language on the original language that was submitted, and we had an opportunity to go back and maybe do a little investigation and research. But I personally would have no problem putting it in as an amendment, simply because the judiciary is going to look at the whole bill anyway. So for us to set it aside doesn't mean they're going to look at it any better or any deeper than they would if we put it in the bill. So I don't see the benefit of setting it aside. I can assure you it's going to get scoured heavily when it gets to the judiciary. But I personally like the new language, and I like the fact that it's really compiled Amendment 20, 21, and 22 that we had in our booklet to begin with into this one document. And I think it really brings up some very bright lines that are clear and understandable, and I think they've done a very nice job of capturing the intent of what we wanted.
Call debate.
So I will support this.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't disagree with that. And there are two ways we can do it. We can either send the committee with this language and ask them to represent us, or we could pass this. But I think where the heavy lifting and the debate on this is going to happen is in judiciary, and I'm not certain that our time is best spent on this as a committee. And once again, it's an opinion, and everyone has one.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Cargo.
This is a kind of a rewrite of our blind trust issue, but it's probably a very thoughtful piece, and it probably is going to require some more scrutiny. And however, with Representative Seaton working with the department on it, I think they've hammered out some pretty good stuff. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and amend it into the bill with the recognition that we are going to probably scrutinize it a little bit more. I know that there, I can think of one amendment. However, at least when we get it to committee, we'll have it in context. Mr. Chairman, is a whole bill to itself. But with regard to how it would be used, I think we'll get to see it in as the tool that it really is in the statute. So I have no problem amending it in, but I have no problem amending it out if it doesn't work good.
Yeah, I would prefer myself to amend it in. I think some excellent work has been talked about in the subcommittee, talked about here, explained it very nicely. We all, I think, agree with the concept for sure. And again, three of us are on the Judiciary Committee, and two of us on the Judiciary Committee are also on the subcommittee who looked at this. So it's had a pretty good look, really, in the State Affairs Committee and the subcommittee of that committee. So I would like to see it amended in if I get the agreement of the committee on that.
Call for a
vote.
I did have
the motion, I believe, for amendment number 22K.50. Do you maintain the objection? Who objected before?
I will withdraw my objection.
Okay, thank you. And I think you made some very, very good points, though. So amendment number 22K.50 has passed the committee, and I believe we'll be looking at this again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, with the understanding that those of us who have any technical questions or anything, we'll talk with Representative Seaton and deal with those in judiciary. I think this indicates the intent of the committee that we want this kind of a provision in the bill. not standalone, but.
And I'd like to thank Representative Seaton for the hard work he's put in on this, because I think excellent concept. I think it's going to be in some form. So thank you very much, Representative Seaton. Okay, let's move to amendment number 23. This is by the governor, and Mr. Jones, I believe, can explain this to us, and hopefully this won't be that difficult. Where are we at here on 23?
About 8 pages in front of your last green sheet. It's way back here.
Get in the back of the book here. Good.
Maybe 20 pages.
One. Two.
Get the book maker to do it.
Still, there we go. Too far. Amendment number 23. Would somebody move amendment 23 for discussion?
I will.
Okay, moved by Representative Grunberg. Any objection for discussion?
I'll object.
Okay, for discussion. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment 23 is designed to clean up some omissions in the list of boards and commissions that are required by Alaska statute to file financial disclosures with the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Currently, there's a list of various boards and commissions whose members must file those financial disclosures annually with the APOC. That list includes the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and various other boards and commissions of that type. There are some that recently came to the governor's attention that she thought should be included, but currently are not. And I don't think it would be controversial to suggest that they should be included. They include the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, the Board of Directors of the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and the Board of Directors of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. All of these boards or commissions deal with important issues involving the state. The public would be benefited by knowing a little bit more about the financial situations and associations of the members of those boards. And therefore, we urge for the committee's consideration Amendment 23.
Any questions, Mr. Jones? Representative Johnson?
Instead of walking over the statute, can you tell me if the permanent fund board is on that list?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, it is.
Any other questions?
I withdraw my objection.
Okay. Amendment 23 has passed. Okay. We now move to Amendment 24. Is my understanding that Amendments 24, 25, and 26 are basically addressing the same issues here. So, members, return, please, to Amendment number 24. Would somebody care to move Amendment 24?
I will move it.
So moved by Representative Dahl.
All objection for discussion.
By Representative Johnson. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment 24 is designed to replace a provision in the bill with a provision that the governor suggested in the original House Bill 109, in the governor's bill. Section 27 of the committee substitute, as it now appears before the committee, defines an insignificant business interest by listing various interests in a business, including services an officer, director, employee, having $5,000 or more in stock or equity interest, or having a 1% interest or more in a business, as being a significant financial interest. Amendment 24 would replace that language with the language included here, which provides that stock or other ownership interest in a business is presumed to be insignificant if the value of the stock or other ownership interest is less than $5,000. The reason we adopted the approach of a presumption is to allow us to reach those cases where the interest itself is worth less than $5,000. But the effect of the official's action could be to increase that value substantially. If we take a black line test and say, as long as it's under $5,000, you're good to go, the risk is that somebody has something worth $4,999, takes official action on it, increases the value of that interest to $1 million, and then says, you can't touch me. It's under 5,000. I'm good. I'm golden. We don't want to allow that. That's why we apply a presumption. The presumption means if it's over 5,000, you can't do it. If it's under 5,000, you better come ask before you do it and get permission from your designated ethics supervisor, because you aren't home free just because it doesn't meet that $5,000 threshold. Now, yesterday on the Senate floor, in the committee substitute for Senate Bill 19, they added this language into Senate Bill 19 to supplement the list of other significant financial interests that exist in that bill. So they had a list that's parallel to what exists now in Section 27 of the committee's bill, and then added the presumption. Now, that's a step in the right direction, but it doesn't get us all the way home. The reason is that if you add this in, you still have that 1% standard, a 1% stock ownership interest or a 1% equity interest. And so, again, if I have a 0.5% interest in a company I can take action on that to increase the value of that to $1 million, for example, I say I'm home free. It was under $5,000. It was under 1% interest. And so the presumption language that they included to supplement the list doesn't go all the way to solving the problem. There are also some enforcement concerns that we have with respect to a 1% standard. It can be difficult to calculate in some circumstances what a 1% interest is, particularly where the business has stock options that it's offered or different levels or classes of stock. In addition, if you look at what really matters, what matters is how much money is at stake, not what percentage of it is at stake, because 1% of a $1,000 business is going to be 10 bucks, and I think we'd all agree that in the big picture, that is not a significant financial interest. So why not go to what really matters, which is the dollar amount? And that's why we didn't include a 1% or some other percentage standard in our proposal. The other thing that Section 27 includes that we did not include is this list of various participations in a business that would disqualify you, being an officer, being a director, being an employee or a contractor. And that's because our goal was to solve the problem that was identified when Mr. Bundy and Mr. Daniel looked at the issue involving the former Attorney General. They said there isn't a clear standard here of when a financial interest in a business is significant. We haven't had trouble figuring out that when you're a director or an officer or an employee or contractor of a business, you have a substantial interest in that business. So that isn't a problem that we felt needed to be resolved or that we decided to attack.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Coghill.
Just a comment. At first, I was inclined to not agree, but the governor has convinced me.
Very convincing lady. Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Chair, the Ethics Committee, a subcommittee, considered this at some length, and we were concerned about just making it a presumption, because the opposite side of the coin, if it's simply presumed to be insignificant, that is not a bright line and is difficult to apply. It may be subject to subjective interpretation both by the employee and by the supervisor. We had a lot of discussion about this, and that would really throw out these this very well thought out list of types of considerations that are easy to apply, certain, and
easy to determine, frankly, on an appeal. The way the Senate did it, apparently yesterday, was to add the presumption to the list. I think that has merit, because what it does is it says that there is a presumption, but that if these factors can show that it really is a significant list, then the employee should be prohibited from participating in the decision. So, Mr. Chair, I don't have a problem with adding the new Section 27. My problem is deleting everything else. I think what the Senate did was a good solution to this, and I would ask that we divide the question and that we first take up adding Section 27 and then determine whether to delete everything else. I'd like to see Section 27 added, but I don't think we should delete everything else we have.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Coghill.
I won't object to dividing the question, but when we get to that point, I will debate the part that he wants to leave in the bill, which is this laundry list of issues. So no objection to dividing the question.
Mr. Jones, any problem with that?
Mr. Chair, no problem with that. I would like the opportunity when we get to the second part of the divided question to address that, if I may.
Okay. So would you make a motion to divide the question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move we divide Amendment 24, and 24A is up through line 10.
Wait a minute. So 1 through 10 is A?
Yes.
Okay.
And then 12 and 13 is B.
Fine. I guess I would move 24A for discussion. Objection to that? Anybody? Okay, without objection, 24A has passed. Now we go to 24B. Somebody want to move 24B?
Yes. I do.
Okay. Any objection to 24B?
I'll object, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay. Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I've been convinced by the governor that the list that is proposed to be deleted should be deleted. And I think the reason why is almost all of the issues dealing with this laundry list of personal interest, ownership of stock, membership of the board, are almost all significant issues and would not fly under the issue of insignificant. And so that's where the governor convinced me.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the motion is to adopt 24B, which means we would delete the current language in Section 27. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, I'm
no, Reverend Cogu, I mean, Grunberg.
I made a terrible procedural error.
Would you please make a note of that?
I object.
How many believe he's made some error?
thank you.
Reverend Grunberg.
I do not want to delete the material. I withdraw my motion to adopt 24B. I oppose B, so I should not have made that motion. I would like to withdraw my motion. I'm on the opposite side.
So with that, I guess...
somebody else has to move it.
Mr. 24B.
Mr. Chairman, since I spoke so vehemently for keeping the deleted part in this amendment, I would move that we adopt 24B.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
At ease.